Hey America.
Start listening now.
On sizzling days like this, we would like to remind you that there is one name that, even still today, means refreshment and refinement. That good old-fashioned kind of podcast that goes down smooth and satisfied. So crack open a cold can of 12 points today.
And welcome to another effervescent episode of 12 Points from America, a Eurovision Song Contest podcast from America, a pirate ship of freaks. I'm Eric.
I'm Derek.
I'm Samantha.
And I'm Danny. God, ain't we just.
Yeah. Yo ho ho.
Where's my rum? I need a bottle of rum.
I love every single political and social development that's happening in the world right now. None of them bother me. Everything is cool. Everything's good. It's Brat Summer version 2.0. Isn't it just?
Yeah.
Now, we got some news. We got some Eurovision news that isn't completely soul-crushing, which is nice. Which is always nice to have.
That's always good.
Yeah, a little something.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to be like, we'll see. Danny, just you wait.
Who knows? Who knows?
What have I not heard?
Nah. I mean, you never know what's going to happen tomorrow. So I guarantee you, just like what happened when we recorded our last episode, literally about 2 days later, we got the word that Martin Osterdahl is stepping down from his role as executive supervisor, which we kind of thought was going to be coming. We kind of figured summertime was going to be the time that big decisions like that and big changes would happen. But yeah, it's official. He's good to gone.
Got him.
How long were you sitting on that one?
About a week.
You are good to go. And then they make him go.
It's got a little, like a bundle on, or a bindle on a stick as he walks away out of the studio. You know.
Remind me, when did Jan Ullason step down? How long ago was that already?
I think 2020 was supposed to be his last.
I think that's right.
And then
he stuck around for 2021?
No, I think Osterdahl took over for 21.
Yeah. Okay.
So Jan Ullason didn't really have an official real send-off. But yeah, Osterdahl just kind of materialized in his place in Rotterdam. So
I was going to say, Osterdahl had to deal with Belarus and Russia and the whole Israel stuff.
Yeah, I will
what
say.
What a fun tenure for him. How fun.
The tenure. I walked by Jan Ullason in Basel. He was he was shorter than I thought he would be.
Yeah,
everyone in Europe kind of turns out to be unless you're in Holland.
I suppose, yeah.
No, Osterdahl's pretty tall.
He's pretty Oster tall.
Yeah.
Nah. I was also just kind of surprised to see it because I figured he was, you know, retired in the Hamptons or whatever.
That he'd just like, dip.
Yeah. Like, I didn't want to be like, what are you doing here? But I kind of did. Like,
I mean,
didn't you leave?
He's still part of the community. I mean, still want to snoop around. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, I, you know, poked my head into my old office and I had a thing to drop off. Some mail got delivered to me by accident. I still poked my head into the old office and said hi to the coworkers that I still liked. So, you know, maybe there's a bit of that.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, Jan Ulla, if you're listening, come on the show. We'll talk about literally anything you want.
What else is he doing?
Jan Ullason joins us to talk about the best type of siding for your house. Whatever.
He joins us for a movie
and
podcast. What if he joined us for all of our preview shows and he was just
brutal,
unrelenting. Yeah.
What a piece of crap.
No prisoners taken. Golly. Absolutely hates everything. My kind of guy.
Is he gonna accidentally slip and be like, you know what? I just don't like Albanians.
Oh,
just explain like, a couple of years, wouldn't it?
Just as a people, like
well, Jan Ulla, if you're still listening,
God, he's not.
If you're not listening, please start. And if you are listening,
how you doing?
Let's
let's chat.
How you doing?
Who's lined up? Is there anyone lined up in his place?
Yeah, like, what like, happens from here?
I mean, honestly,
it's like Martin Osterdahl sort of was announced, like, oh, gosh, right away, right? Oh, but they were planning on that, right?
Yeah. Martin Green is sort of interim, kind of doing the double duty, his current job and now taking over the sort of exec supervisor. But I'm sure that people will throw their hats into the ring. And I don't know if it's, you know, from a group of people at the reference group that, you know, one gets elevated or, you know, I don't know the inner workings of the HR system at the EBU. God, I can't even imagine. But so, I'm sure we'll find out hopefully by end of summer, beginning of fall.
It seemed like his role, at least as a front facing thing, like a public facing thing, was kind of reduced this past year anyway.
Yeah.
Yes.
And some of that was, and we talked about, like, this was kind of deliberate because he was just going to get booed every time they put him on TV. Yeah, we talked about that. But I don't know. The role is not what it was a few years ago.
I think he just wanted to be more of a wonk than somebody who, I don't know, like, basked in the idea of turning this role into something front-facing. Like, I think he just wanted it to be more of a, he just wanted to be a paper pusher and a number cruncher rather than an on-screen personality.
I mean, maybe he wanted one thing and then realized he kind of wanted a different thing.
Oh, yeah.
At the end of the day.
Anybody in, I think, that position, it was going to have a lot of stuff thrown at him, like just the circumstances of the world that we're in right now. And I feel like anybody who takes up the mantle is going to have a really, really, how do I put this? It's not going to be an easy job. That's for damn sure.
No. The idea of him stepping down right now, it's not surprising. Like, you know, it's like you want someone to stick around forever. But like if after the past 4 years you were like, I'm not sure I want to do this anymore. I'm pretty sure everyone was like, you know what? I can see that.
Yeah, I bet you don't.
Not his fault, mm-hmm. you know, not his. I don't think really anything that he did incorrectly. You know, everything is sort of by committee with Eurovision. So nothing can really be chalked up to it being his fault. I don't know. Are we going to give him a 1 out of 10?
I think we're still in the thick of things. I think we'll see who comes in next, what situations get resolved or changed, or, you know, how the contest moves and flows like it always does. But I kind of at points felt bad for the guy because, I mean,
oh my gosh, he had to do the whole vote pooling thing too when that came out, that whole scandal.
Oh yeah, back in 22. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, the whole Azerbaijan and, yeah, gosh.
Poland and there were a few others. But a couple of others.
Man, he had a couple of major things to preside over that were not his fault. God.
Right.
I think the thing was probably the biggest.
Yeah.
That was. Well,
you think that was the biggest?
Disqualification
at the main contest on someone who had a shot being top three? Yeah, I can see it.
The amount of hate he got for that was,
yeah.
Yeah.
Number one, unfair.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But number two is just, even then, I don't know. I can see why he was like, yeah, you know what?
A bad look either way. I think he was tired of being catch 22'd every single year with something.
Yeah, honestly, a lot of the situations that he found himself in, it was very damned if you do, damned if you don't. Like, which delegation, which audience do you piss off? And I do not envy him, and I do not envy whoever takes over. It's... You know, working at Eurovision, you know, being the head of it, you have your big dreams of, you know, I think any Eurovision fan would fantasize about what they would do if they were the Janula, if they were the Martin, if they were the Svante Stuxelius. But you look at the nitty gritty of it. It is a hellish job that is not just television producer. It is diplomat.
Yeah.
It is therapist. It is legal scholar. It is all of these things in one. And it's not just glad handed.
Yeah, for sure.
You're not just going around to opening ceremonies and shaking hands.
Where is Martin Green from?
He's from the UK. BBC based.
Okay.
BBC.
All right.
I mean, I just hope the next person will be given the opportunity to look directly into camera and go, yes, we have a result.
Yeah, what's their catchphrase going to be?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Can they not? I love Martin Lister all said it once, and then he's like, oh, this gets to be my goddamn catchphrase.
They did a whole song.
They
whole song over it. What if the new one is...
Janula had it, too. I mean...
What was his?
Oh, gosh.
Take it away.
Show
me the points or whatever. Yeah.
Point me, baby.
What if it's just like, and God have mercy on our soul?
God, it really feels that way some years.
Just, we have the points, I guess.
You guys aren't going to believe this.
What if the next guy's catchphrase is just, we have the numbers, do with them as you will, and then he just leans back and cracks open a cold one.
There you go.
Takes his headphones off, locks
Jason
the door.
Jason Momoa unfurling the lawn chair.
Yeah, the lawn chair.
It's like, let's see what happens, shall we?
I'll be good.
Here are the numbers. You're going to love them.
I just want to see him roll back in his chair, light up a cigarette, and just like hold a glass of whiskey and just be like, yep, not on me anymore. Remember, you did this.
That should be it. That should be the catchphrase. Remember,
you did this.
Did this to yourself. Yeah.
Are you happy? I hope you're okay. Here, we got the numbers. I hope you're happy. Good luck sleeping tonight.
Oh, God.
Anyway, I realized I didn't do the socials. I didn't hit
it. I was about to say, just as that died down, if you weren't going to say anything, I was just going to be like, Sam, I think we need to record a socials to wedge
you. We do. Yep, as per standard, as per usual. You can find us on all the usual places at 12pointsUSA, or just email us directly at 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com. You can find our merchandise over on our Redbubble page, where you can support us with a one-off donation on our Ko-fi account or a sustained monthly donation on our Patreon. Whether you support us financially or not, we love and appreciate you either way, but Patreon supporters do get exclusive content and early access to episodes. And we do like to give shout outs to our newest members of our Patreon community. In this case, Hoofy has just joined us. I do not know what country you're coming from. You appear to be paying in euro. So thank you for supporting us from across the pond. We do appreciate it. Our little community, it's really folks all over the world. And, you know, just because we're 12 points from America, that doesn't mean that we're for Americans. Just by Americans.
God, no.
I am for a certain subsection of Americans.
I'm for Minnesotans. For sure.
Yeah.
Definitely not Americans.
Minnesota's all right.
Minnesota's. I'm not an American exceptionalist in any way, shape, or form. I am kind of a Minnesotan exceptionalist. Like,
yeah,
we're
for sure.
We're badass. We're amazing. Noom!
As the loudest motorcycle in the world goes right past me.
In Minnesota, of all places.
Liz and I just bought a house. And woo! it's going to be on basically the edge of a cul-de-sac, and I'm not going to have to deal with that nonsense anymore, and I can't wait.
Say that.
I thought for a second you're going to be that. Like, we bought a house and we're hedging our bets for Eurovision 2026 and we bought it in Vienna.
I mean, that's a safe bet. Speaking of which.
Yeah. Yes. Well, you know what? You say that, and that basically guarantees that we are going to be
We narrowed it down from the interesting cities. Now it's just the usual suspect.
Yes,
you know, we don't even get a choice between Glasgow and Liverpool this time. We get a choice between London and Manchester. The version in Austria.
Yeah.
Vienna and Innsbruck.
Yeah, Vienna and Innsbruck. Vienna, we know that they hosted it beautifully back in 2015. Mm-hmm. I would be thrilled to head back there. It's a fabulous city. I already have my coffee order, you know, in place. Like my morning Franziskana, bitte. Or it could be in Innsbruck, which is an Olympic host city back in the 70s. It has a supposedly an older but still quite nice Olympic arena, the Olympiahalle, which can hold like 10,000 or something like that. A little bit tougher to get to, but supposedly it's a beautiful area. I will spend half of my money again on coffee and the other half on Swarovski, because I believe their factory is like really, really close to there.
Yeah. Wait, did you buy some last time we were there?
I looked. I did not I did not purchase, but I did put my hand to a Swarovski store when we were in Basel. But yes, but it's made. But the actual like factory and museum is just outside of Innsbruck. I went there when I was like, it's lovely.
Are we?
That was Russia's postcard.
Are we going to be okay with having two like ski resort Eurovisions in a row?
Yes,
100%.
Yes. Okay.
All right.
I mean, and to be fair, like Basel wasn't really nestled in the mountains. Basel was in, you know, not in the heart of the Alps.
It's the armpit of Europe.
Yeah. What, Basel?
No. Yeah, that's crap hole.
Basel is gorgeous. But no, I wouldn't call it a mountain town exactly. No, I mean, it's a coastal town. Sort of.
It was also part France and part Germany.
But it's like, okay, well, who's winning next year? Is it going to be France and then we'll go to Chamonix? Like,
hey.
I don't think Chamonix could.
Just got to stay in the Alps.
Chamonix is probably Mill Street sized, if I had to guess. Like, it's not big.
You know, maybe if Italy wins it again, we do a sort of Milano Cortina d'Ampezzo kind of thing.
I just checked. Chamonix has a population less than 9,000.
Under 9,000.
Perfect.
Cool.
Yeah.
Let's, anyway, we'll double that for a couple weeks.
Are we thinking Vienna then? I mean, are we reasonably assured?
I wouldn't rule it out. You know, they've shown us that a city that puts in a good bid has the possibility of doing it. But, you know,
I feel like Innsbruck is a little bit tougher to get to than Basel was. I mean, they both had their own airports, but Innsbruck, it's a little bit more remote. You know, there was an hour train away from Zurich. Mm-hmm. Innsbruck, like, it's a 3-hour, 4-hour train ride from Vienna. They have an airport in Innsbruck, but most of the flights seem to be seasonal, and I'm not sure if that's winter seasonal or summer seasonal. I don't quite know how a lot of delegations will be able to get there quickly and easily. Also, it's going to be a city with a bit more of a limit on housing opportunities and housing availability. I don't know. It's a lovely city. It's worth a visit if you ever have the chance to get out there. I'm not counting it out, but I would probably say my gut is saying about 80% it's going to be Vienna, but I'm not going to rule it out.
Yeah, you're right. If they choose Innsbruck, it would be farther away than Linz or Salzburg were, you know? Yeah.
A lot farther.
It's kind of in the panhandle. It's like the nearest city would be like kind of Munich, but that's
it's weird to talk about Austria as having a panhandle.
What? I mean,
I don't know. Austria's not even that big. It's like, I don't know. I think of that more as like the the drumstick of the Austria is.
we had some friends that were in Austria during the contest in Basel. And we were like, oh, it's not that far. You could come by and see us in Basel and it would be like here, except there. And we looked, it's like an 8-hour train ride from, I think they were staying in Graz, but they were in Graz and Vienna, which are kind of close to each other. Mm-hmm. But like from Vienna, it was like 7-8 hours to Basel. Some of that is because of terrain, I would imagine.
Yeah.
But Austria is, if nothing else, longer than you think.
Yeah.
I think is what I've ascertained from looking into that. So
yep.
Yeah, Innsbruck would be pretty out of the way. I feel like if they're feeling spicy and want to have a kind of a unique and maybe weird, probably smaller Eurovision, then I think Innsbruck is probably worth a look. But I think it's just and that would be, I believe, the first national capital to host a Eurovision since Lisbon.
Yep, you took the talking point right out of my mouth.
Wow.
So yes.
Impressive.
Yes.
And then Lisbon was the end of a pretty long streak of national capitals, going back, because before that would have been Kiev.
Go back to Stockholm.
Stockholm, Vienna, Copenhagen.
And then
the first time Malmö hosted was would have been the time before that. But yeah, it's been coming up on a decade since a national capital hosted Eurovision, which is kind of odd. But I my sense is the streak is about to.
I mean, at the very least, for ease of transport, it's relatively simple for folks to get from most major American cities to Vienna. I think I'd be able to do it in two flights.
Mm-hmm. I think we from MSP it would be a layover in like Toronto.
We had a layover in Amsterdam on the way there.
You could do Amsterdam, sure. You could do Toronto, you could do Chicago, honestly. Chicago or Newark probably has direct to Vienna.
For you hate yourself, anyway. You could probably do CDG. I mean, maybe Keflavik. There are options.
Love going through CDG. Give me a 2-hour layover where for some reason I still have to run.
CDG.
I don't hate myself.
I've only flown out of CDG once, and I don't remember it being too bad. But I'm aware of its reputation.
If you are starting or stopping at CDG, it's not terrible. If you're transferring at CDG, it's painful.
Yeah, colossal.
Well, cool. I won't do that then.
Yeah.
Plus, if you can get Chocomel if you transfer in Amsterdam.
Always true.
We're still gunning for that Chocomel sponsorship, aren't we?
Always.
Until I die.
We gave up on the tea cakes. That's too bad.
Oh God! If only.
If we couldn't get that for Liverpool, I don't know what hope we ever had. Stop responding to my emails, and they sent that threatening letter. It's just terrible. Anyway, let's see. We had the only other really big piece of news was a statement, kind of a non-statement, but from the EBU. There, you know, discussions about next year have already begun. These particular ones were at the BBC, if I'm not mistaken, and that topic came up. And well, nothing has changed to this point. I think it was interesting that they bothered to have a press release about this, that kind of acknowledged some things that I feel they haven't always done. They acknowledged I think that, like, listen, we want to do this, you know, United by Music thing. That's our goal. That's our mission statement at this point. But we have to admit that world events are inextricably linked to these things. And we're going to keep talking about it. We're going to figure out the best course of action going forward as we try to be, you know, inclusive, but also safe, happy, and yada yada. It was a perfectly fine statement that, I don't know, kicked the can down the road a little bit.
Yeah, honestly. Like we keep saying, this is summertime. Discussions are still ongoing. And this is an incredibly complicated issue that kind of, frankly, goes well above our pay grades. There's a bunch of regulations and rules that the EBU are kind of bound by, plus the will and the whims of the members of the EBU itself, like the actual member organizations and member states. So, again, like I was saying before, working for Eurovision is more than just, you know, listening to music and glad handing. It's a lot of legalities and a lot of really intense diplomatic subtleties and a lot of playing tightrope. And I do not envy the organizers.
Yeah. When you really think about it, like, putting on a TV show with 40 broadcasters, like, cooperating is kind of insane. Why do we do this?
We don't do this. We just sit at home and talk crap about the people who do it.
Get haughty about our great opinions about it.
Yeah.
Pirate ship of freaks. All right. Let's hop to our topic of the day, shall we? That this one came from me, as it turns out. This was inspired by a couple weeks ago. I was at a concert. I went to see the French group Justice, which was amazing. Super, super, super fun and good and loud. Holy crap. But their opening song, which was one of their first songs, and I still think one of their best, is just called Genesis. It's the, I think, first song on their first album. It just has this big, big, big booming sound to it. It becomes danceable as it progresses. And I just got to thinking, like, a Eurovision crowd would go crazy for this, but it has no words. So it just, like, do you add a vocal so that you can and quite plausibly make the song worse? Or, well, I guess my question is, to put it very, very simply, are vocals truly necessary? And I understand that the rule is yes, that's what the rule is. But I've been trying to imagine a Eurovision where they're not, and where there are opportunities for instrumental pieces to strive and to compete against these other pop things. Suppose somebody had an original 3-minute violin piece, or
who would submit that?
I don't know, Austria probably.
shoving out a great host entry thing. Get back in there.
So obviously, I know what the rules are. I also know that our winner in 1995, Secret Garden, is basically instrumental, and people loved it.
Oh yeah!
Like, imagine if Ireland could send some cool Irish thing.
Well, the Secret Garden kind of was.
Oh no, I know.
I mean, we say that was more
Irish than Norwegian.
Exactly. Like, it's Norway with an asterisk. Let's be real.
Can you imagine, like, you know how, like, all the countries now just try to emulate Sweden? What if we got to, like, the late 90s and every country was like, we need our own Irish thing?
Well, kind of, yeah. Like,
they would not have been entirely wrong to do so.
Right.
Anyway, that's my talking point, basically, is what would a Eurovision look like where vocals were not required?
It would look like the Eurovision, or what is it, the Young Musicians show?
Yeah.
But would it? Because here's the thing. A bunch of countries are still going to send songs that they think have a real shot at winning. So those are going to have vocals. But then it seems weird to have a contest where you have some people who are competing with vocals and some people who are, like, per the Eurovision rules, just sitting there while their studio cut just plays through the sound system. Like, what?
So,
and that's it? They just sit back and rake in the cash? Like,
I mean, nowadays we, you know, we don't have live music. We haven't had it since the late 90s when the orchestra basically had the kibosh put on it. So a Eurovision without vocal music it's karaoke at that point. It's just, mm-hmm. you know, press the playback button and off you pop.
I mean, it kind of already is
karaoke. Yeah, I was going to say, I would argue that it already is karaoke because everything else is fair. Pre-recorded. I would say in this scenario, there would need to be a change of rules where at least some amount of instrumentation has to be live. Mm. So let's say it's like a cool electric guitar piece. You know, somebody does a solo or something like that. You have to play it. Whatever the primary instrument is, whatever is providing the melody, has to be done live.
Okay.
Now, I also understand that there are valid logistical reasons for why it's only vocals right now. Well, and now it's and we'll get to this, but it's only the main vocal now.
Mm-hmm.
That having to sound check for, you know, every drum set and guitar, harmonica and what have you. That was a joke.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Especially from country to country, staging to staging, mm-hmm. you know, keeping that all straight would be a nightmare.
And the changeover is 40 seconds. Mm-hmm. Like, I get all that. I just think this is this undertaking is so remarkable as it is. I understand not wanting to like have a whole band be live necessarily. But I feel like having some of these other things be allowed to be live, especially when they're so prominent in these songs that I'm making up in my head. That
I know a lot of this seems to be a problem of your own making, Eric.
Well, you know what? I think it would be interesting to see some live instrumentation. I think it would be interesting to see this opened up. I mean,
The musical diversity has been
so good the last few years. Why not open it up further and allow for, you know, a sweet slap bass performance or
no, I mean, we don't even have to go somewhere niche slap. Like that. You know, every now and then there is an instrumental song that, you know, sticks up on the charts. You know, all of a sudden there's, you know, it's not every day, but there's pop songs that are purely instrumental, stuff that crosses over. So I can totally see it's just like, oh, okay, if there was, you know, one or two countries every year that decided, oh, we're gonna send a really cool electronic piece, or we're gonna send something that is, you know, very folksy that has like almost zilch in terms of vocals. I can see that happening. But at the same time, like, then they sort of are playing by different rules, aren't they? Because this, like, I don't, not rules, but they're playing by different metrics. It feels different. I wrote this as a note there that even though we call this the Eurovision Song Contest, there is still an inextricable facet of this contest that is a singing contest, not just a song contest.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, we can reward virtuosity all we want, but there will be some venues in which your singing will not be able to outclass someone who's a virtuoso on the violin, someone who's a virtuoso on the fiddle. I don't know. What are they going to bring?
the oud.
Yeah,
plays
a
mean oud. I mean, I guess why should that virtuosity be limited to vocal?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to think if there's actually something within the rules that says that there has to be a vocal component. I mean, I'm assuming there must be, or else we wouldn't have had a song like, you know, like Nocturne, which may have been written originally as an instrumental piece. I think there are a handful of other songs that were really, really stripped back on the amount of vocals that are in there. Quartissimo and Martina from Slovenia back in 2009 with Love Symphony was basically mostly just a string quartet with one like vocal repeated through line that kind of popped up here and there. What was the other one that I was thinking of? Ava, there's a song, I think, from Finland, I want to say 98 or 99, called Ava, that was also very, very, very minimal. I think Bulgaria 2008 was also super, super minimal. Deep Zone and Balthazar, DJ Take Me Away, where the vast majority of the song was an electronic beat. Then it slowed down. Balthazar, or the singer, came in, had a repeated vocal line, and then kind of stepped away. It still was within the rules. So, like, mm-hmm. if that rule wasn't in place, would they have bothered?
I mean, it kind of comes to this question of what is the bare minimum that you'd have to do?
Right.
Especially now with the backing vocalists pre-recorded. Could you feasibly have your lead vocalist do the absolute bare minimum a la Tutto Italia?
It was what was on my mind when this question was brooked. Like,
because we've had so many bizarre plays with vocals. I mean, sort of the difference between like Grab the Moment by Joust, where they were allowed to mix like it, but then Toy wasn't allowed to mix it. And I don't know what the differences were there or how that discussion went.
Are we allowed to vocode still? Is that still banned? Like,
I don't think that's allowed now.
Yeah.
I'm looking through the rules. Any sort of auto-tune or modification to the live vocals is not allowed.
So then I guess there's sort of a question of, we've had songs with made-up languages, and I don't want to get into the language discussion because that's a separate thing.
Right.
Yes, yes.
But if you have a song with completely made-up lyrics, I mean, does that I guess that sort of still counts because there are vocals, but a singer who, there are no lyrics, it's just vocalization.
Like if Halfdan
Khan came on, La Forza, right?
Yeah, basically. That if they did the entire song, like operatic or however.
If somebody just went on stage and did just a primal scream and like only a very short section of the song, you know, like massive intro, outro, but like 10 seconds in the middle of just a primal scream.
I mean, if
it's
works.
Vocal, it's not.
Sam, you need to get on the phone to Iceland right now.
Yeah, seriously. Hattari. Yeah, what's Björk up to right about now? I feel like this would be like right up around.
It opens up a can of worms that I what are the, what would be the consequences if you suddenly said Eurovision still the same stuff, you know, it still has to be under 3 minutes, still has to be presented live. Like, what are the unintended consequences of saying vocals are not required anymore? I mean, because otherwise what is it? Like Slovenia sends a song that's just them pushing play. Like,
yeah, then what's the point? Then it's
yeah,
just
what
dance
is the point?
Or, yeah, then it's but miming, it's dance.
You could send a 6-person dance troupe to do like a choreographed performance.
Yeah, but then it's not even like a song contest. Then it's just Britain's Got Talent.
Technically it is a song though.
Yeah, like
I know it's just, it kind of comes down to it. Like I know someday someone's going to push this and they're going to have to say in writing,
they really are,
you have to have lyrics and they have to consist of at least X number of words or take up X percentage of the song before it'll count.
Remember that Polish national final entrant from a few years ago that was in sign language?
Yes. Oh, and that counts. That absolutely counts. That is a language.
I agree, it doesn't
come out of a voice, you know,
because
voice
it's okay, but it doesn't have vocals.
Yeah, you're right.
But it does have lyrics.
But it does have lyrics. So
it does have lyrics.
Also, I'm looking at the rules here.
Yeah.
And,
Eric, what are you doing?
What do you see?
I'm going to steal the Declaration of Independence.
Did you do Control F in search of vocals?
Yes, that is exactly what I did.
Okay, all right. What do you got?
The only mention of vocals is that there is no pitch correction allowed on live vocals. This is a version of the rules for public information. It is not the full version of the rules.
Right.
It seems to imply that there must be vocals.
If you wanted to, a dog could sing for you.
Yes.
It don't say nowhere in the rules.
Okay, I think it does. That one it actually does, yeah.
Oh, it does. That's why it's sorry.
Mm-hmm. They can play basketball. They can't put me on stage.
Mm-hmm. Uh-uh. Yeah. Wikipedia notes that they're fully instrumental songs have never been permitted. They've never.
Oh, they just have straight up never. Or like, is that a case by case?
Never.
I'm wondering, is it explicitly said in the rules, or is it just sort of implied that somebody could just
on the website? I feel like there is a more full version of the rules that is not available to the public.
Almost certainly. And I know that kind of came up when I was looking for official wording on sampling and things like that. I'm like,
yeah.
When I wrote that article a couple of years ago for Insight.
I
like that idea though, Eric, that if it were altered so that purely instrumental songs were allowed, I like the idea that it be stipulated that whatever has the main melody needs to be live, that there's some, there's something that needs to be mic'd on stage. Like, what if someone's just out there doing like, send Savion Glover to Eurovision. We just mic his beat, you know?
I mean, well, it depends. Is he tapping out Morse code?
Yeah. To the Allies.
Yeah. Those are lyrics.
Those are totally lyrics. Totally lyrics.
So our takeaway from this is, if you embed Morse code into the backing track, those are lyrics and that counts.
I like it.
Man,
we're opening up a can of worms.
SOS. The sign language works.
Yes,
I guess there's a performance aspect. I wish they picked them.
I'm curious about this because I must have forgotten about this. Where I don't know, provide a link on socials because I want to take a look at this. What is this sign language performance? There was like
the song was the group was called Unmute, I think they were, and the it was in Polish sign language, and I think that the title came out as like Louder Than Words. I want to say this was the Polish national final.
This is ringing
maybe
a bell.
Like 3 years ago.
I think we must have talked about this. Yeah.
And it was great. And
it was
actually
really cool.
Yeah. And it's not even the first time that we've had sign language as the primary mode of communication in a Eurovision national finalist. I want to say Finland 2008, 2009, there was a song called Speaker Box by a Finnish sign language rapper.
I was gonna say, Not Below.
Named Signmark. And he was the primary act and was signing his rap. And then he had another rapper basically translating into English. But Signmark was the intended act, like the intended featured act. And then the actual vocals were sort of a secondary. But it was Signmark's show. But it was really cool to see the Polish, I think they were called Unmute, just take that to the next level and just take the training wheels of audio language off. And it was... we could have had that. But yeah, the song's a bop. Both of them.
Yeah, it looks like it, Louder Than Decibels.
Louder Than Decibels. Thank you.
I tried to Google this with just a few words, like just deaf Polish Eurovision. And I got an article from Eurovision Apocalypse, friend of the show.
Hey.
That talked about this song and has some very nice things to say about it. It's really cool. I wonder if we'll see them again.
I hope so.
I would hope so. What else have we left on the table here? Any other comments on this? Because I feel like we've opened up a can of worms that
why not? Let's just open more cans.
They should be allowed to kill someone on stage.
I think I've you should be allowed to kick one executive supervisor right in the balls.
And this is why women should be executive supervisors. Actually, no, that's
it. I mean, if Martin Elsdahl's replacement is a woman, that'd be lovely.
Exactly. We haven't had a female executive supervisor since, early 2000s? Before Svante, I know that.
Oh, wow. But there has been one?
There
at
has.
Least one?
Yeah.
Let me look this up. Honestly, if you asked me to guess, I would have said no. So that's nice. That's better than I expected.
It took this long to get a woman in Doctor Who. So
yeah, there are a couple of high ranking folks on like in the reference group who are women, and I think would potentially be in line for something like that if they wanted to go that route. On the topic of vocal things, I've said this before. I'm going to continue to say it. I really liked the all vocals must be live rule, and I think they should bring it back.
I concur. Even though I realize that if it wasn't for that, we wouldn't have had the wonderful moment of Davy Freyr's backing chorus of anybody who wanted to send a thing in. That would have been...
Well, and there are a handful of things that I think there are quite a few things that we wouldn't have gotten if not for that. But I don't know. I feel like... What was the one from...
Just stepping back a little bit in terms of executive supervisor timeline.
Oh, yeah.
We have had a couple of female exec supervisors. Christine Marshall Ortiz in 96, and then again from 98 to 2002. Marie-Claire Vionnet in 1997. And then Sarah Yuen in 2003. And then it was Svante Saxelius, Jan Olsson, and Martin Osterdahl. But yeah, there have been a few female executive supervisors.
Good. Good, good.
How many executive supervisors have there been?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Martin Osterdahl was number 11.
So they swap them out every like 5 or 6 years.
It depends. Sarah Yuen and Marie-Claire Vionnet were only in for 1 year apiece. Staxelius was in from 2004 to 2010. Jan Ulla was in from 2011 to 2020. And then Osterdahl. He had a pretty decently long tenure. Frank Neff was in place from 1978 to 1992. Mr. Neff. Yes, he was in for quite a while. I think he's got the longest record of anybody. But
excellent.
Yeah.
Anyway, vocals, bad. Should just get rid of them entirely. And get rid of voting, because everything goes wrong.
What would you say to if they made a separate contest that was entirely original instrumentational performances?
I'd be interested in checking that out.
It'd be cool, but then it just sort of all devolves into the same two genres, doesn't it?
Not necessarily.
I mean, I would like to, I would be interested to find out.
I would have said like folk classical or like electronic. Like that's basically what the majority would be.
I mean, right now we do have, as Derek mentioned, Eurovision Young Musicians, which one is specifically for younger classically focused artists generally. But if there was a side, you know, another competition that was open to, you know, just Eurovision virtuosos or Eurovision instrumental competition, whatever you want to call it, I would totally be down for that. Because I think
you could end up getting a lot of like traditional folk music from all of these different, like Balkan music and things like that out of that, where that's more truly traditional. Whereas we get, and like, I love a song like Zari or La Danova from Armenia, that like, but those really kind of took those things and made them pop. And that's great when it's done really well. And those are examples of it being done really well. But if we had a contest like this, where there wasn't necessarily so much pressure to popify what you're doing, I think we'd get all kinds of interesting things.
Yeah.
But I, Danny, you might be right that like maybe it eventually just devolves down to a couple of things. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. I mean, would people opt to present a song that is emblematically of their nation, or would they opt for a song that is more universal and a bit more easily accessible, especially when you don't have to worry about a language barrier?
And if that ain't just what Eurovision's all about.
True. And yeah. I mean, that's, yeah. Whether the language is there or not, that's still a question that still hangs in the air. So we've solved nothing.
We did it. We saved the city.
All right. Anything else that we wanted to say about this before we have one last bit of news on our docket? Danny, should we pass this over to you?
Sure. Oh, not much to say. Oh, it's a major announcement, but nothing that's going to be, you know, an absolute sea change as to the content or the feel of the show. I'm just kind of not going to be on the show every single week anymore. That's it. What is there? No need to be a big kerfuffle about it. Just stepping away. You know, it's been... How many years have I been here to torment you guys and all of the listeners out there? Over 6 years at this point.
More than 6 years, yeah.
Damn. Just taking a breather, taking a step away. Let me tell you, when it comes time to talk about the batch of tripe that gets served up to us in time for previews, I will be back here, and you'll be having
wishing
to suffer through what I
again.
Have to say. Yeah, exactly. You'll be suffering through it then, and you'll wish that I stayed away.
Oh, those junior kids are not going to be spared. Don't worry.
God, no. But yeah, that is all. You know, the podcast isn't going anywhere, but
no.
I am. So.
No, you're just, you are just kind of transitioning to more of a podcaster emeritus, featured player.
Yes. Yeah.
You're a special treat rather than Danny is a sometimes food.
I am a sometimes food. Yes. I've had people say that about me.
No, we love you. This is not any sort of acrimonious anything. It's just, you know, life and scheduling and brain space. So you know that the door, Danny, is always, always open.
Always. Yeah.
Always.
There is no 12 points lore developing here. There really isn't.
Right, exactly. And, you know. Door is always open whenever you see a topic, because you're still going to be part of our little group chat here. If you see a topic that sounds interesting, you might just, you know, jump scare us and just show up at our podcast.
We could get Danny'd at any time.
Oh my God. But yeah, we love you, Danny. You are an absolute badass, and the show will be certainly very different without you constantly here screaming about God only knows what.
About Slovenia. Just that.
About Slovenia. You know, yeah. Yeah. We need a new Slovenia stand.
We'll get a Danny soundboard going, and ooh, it'll be like he was never gone.
Yes, Slovenia.
Perfect.
Slovenia. I can't wait to be just another voice on your drive time radio show.
All right. Well, until then, everybody, you know how to reach us on socials, 12pointsUSA on basically everything, 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com if you want to email us directly. Any favorite Danny stories that we can pass over to him in his absence. Or, you know, the next time he shows up, we just read him a whole bunch of your comments. We'd love to hear them. Either way, we appreciate you being with us, especially during this slow season. We will see you at our next episode. But until then, everybody, I've been Samantha.
I've been Derek.
I've been Eric.
And I've been Danny.
Yes, you have been Danny. Yeah. And America.
Stop listening now.